helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. A republic can only exist as long as the people trust their elections. Yet our trust in our electoral system seems to be declining. This cannot be good news for the republic. Some people blame this growing distrust in the American election system in misinformation or people using social media to exaggerate its issues. Others point to those problems as evidence that things need to be fixed. So what is the best way to deal with this decline in trust in our elections? Is it to downplay the problems in an effort to retain public trust, or is it to expose them? I say it's important to know what the problems are. After all, if the electoral system is not functioning in a trustworthy manner, then it shouldn't be trusted. But it's not enough to point out the problems, or even to offer solutions. If trust in our election system is to be restored, we the people must not only offer solutions, but enact them. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And today, we're talking about elections, because there's more and more news coming out about elections. Not just the 2022 elections, but the 2020 elections. And not about the outcome of the elections, but issues we're finding within the election process itself. And that should be the part that disturbs us. Whether our candidate won or lost, whether we like the results or not, if we cannot trust them, if the losing side cannot trust that the election was proper, then the republic is in grave peril. Because now, not only do the people not trust the election, they begin to question the outcome. They begin to question, is it the representatives we chose that are actually exercising our power? And we turn more and more into an oligarchy where the elections are manipulated like they are in such places like Iran and Venezuela. So let's take a look at some of the latest news coming out and ask ourselves not only how big are these problems, but what can we do to help solve it? Not just what someone else should do. What can we, the people, you as an individual, me as an individual, what can we do to make things better? Now, I want to start off with what appears to be some serious allegations of federal interference in elections. Now, I want to make an important point. See, every election the citizens vote in is a state election. Even when you're voting for U.S. House, U.S. Senator, the president, you're actually voting in a state election. You're voting for an office. The representative in the House or the senator is representing a district in the state or the state itself. And according to the Constitution, the rules for doing so are set by the state, although Congress can make some alterations. So Article 1, Section 4 says the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the place of choosing electors. So the responsibility for these elections is a state responsibility. Yes, Congress can change the times and places and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives, but only U.S. senators and representatives. We've gotten kind of lazy and let Congress set rules for all sorts of elections, but there's part of the problem. See, the reason these are state elections is, well, states have different priorities. States have different issues in how you hold the election. You take a state like Delaware, very small, very compact. They have fewer travel issues than, say, a state like Texas or Idaho or Montana. So there are some concerns there. But what happens when the federal government, in addition to playing with the rules and just expecting the states to hold them, not just for House and Senate elections, but for all their elections. Well, that's when we start running into problems. Now, two states, Missouri and Louisiana, are currently suing both the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security over acts taken during the 2020 election. And in a recent deposition of Special Agent Elvis Chan, who is in charge of cyber affairs at the FBI San Francisco field office, well, there's some interesting announcements coming out. For example, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt tweeted, "We found that the FBI plays a big role in working with social media companies to censor speech, from weekly meetings with social media companies ahead of the 2020 election to asking for account takedowns." This, to me, is, again, it's very important. Remember, we had the account for the sitting president, the official POTUS account, taken down off of Twitter. And again, it was that criminal, not unless it was at the behest of someone in government, but it certainly did impact the election. Furthermore, it stated that Chen gave major social media companies warnings that may have led them to censor information about the Hunter Biden laptop, the laptop of then a former Vice President Biden, that had, well, let's say some pretty incriminating information, not just about Hunter, but about Joe Biden as well. Polls taken just after the 2020 election pointed to something like 17% of people, Biden voters, said they would have voted differently if they had known about the laptop. So the suppression of that information, the suppressing the dissemination of that information, certainly seems to have had an impact on the election. Now, A.G. Smith said that Chan stated that the FBI regularly sent social media companies lists of URLs and social media accounts that should be taken down because they were disinformation from malign foreign influence operations. And he said on many occasions, the platforms took down the accounts flagged by the FBI. Now, here's where things, to me, get really sticky. Okay, first of all, you've got the FBI identifying stuff as disinformation. That means the FBI was violating the First Amendment because they were abridging a person's freedom of speech. But Paul, they didn't take the tweets down. No, no, no. They told someone else to do it for them. Which means these social media companies apparently broke federal law. See, if it is true that at the behest of the FBI, people at these social media companies restricted speech on their platforms, they violated Title 18 United States Code Section 242, possibly. So that reads, whoever under color of any law, statute, regulation, ordinance, or custom willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. Now, I want to deal with these slightly separately, right? So the FBI, whoever in the FBI was encouraging people to take down speech, take down publications, right? This is technically not freedom of speech. It's technically freedom of the press. I know we misunderstand press. The word press, as it was defined in 1791, when it was written into the First Amendment, was anyone in the art or business of publishing. So these tweets, these YouTube videos, these Facebook posts, these are not speech, they're publications. You are publishing information. So the question is the FBI abridging a person's, are they abridging a person's freedom of the press without due process? In other words, it'd be one thing if the FBI had evidence that these were actually that they were lies, that they were fraudulent. I don't even see fraudulent information. If they actually had, if they could make a court case, if they had probable cause for a warrant, if they could show that the information was libelous, slanderous, then okay, there'd be a chance. But that's not apparently what happened. So the FBI became a judge and jury and simply left the social media companies to be the executioner when it came to freedom of the press. We simply say this, well, this is misinformation. Based on what? Where's your probable cause? Where's the due process to protect the rights of the individual? There apparently was none. Now, the question, the other part of it is, well, about the social media? And that's where the word willfully becomes very important. See, when I'm dealing with an entity about a violation of Title 18, Section 242, I'm very specific before bringing that up to point out the violations that they will be committing. I talk about a book fair I was at shortly after COVID hit, and the preparations I had made should the police give us a hard time about not wearing a mask, and pointing out the constitutional violations of the mask mandate, pointing out that it was void according to both Alexander Hamilton and the Supreme Court, and making the point, now that I've informed you, are you still willing to willfully subject me to the deprivation of a right protected by the Constitution? And that's not what happened. That's why I think a case against anyone at these social media companies would fail. It's not that what they did was correct. It's not that they didn't violate the rights. It's that they weren't willful about it. They probably didn't know any better. And it'd be very hard to show anything different. Now, we've already seen the videos of Mark Zuckerberg saying that, I think it was on Joe Rogan's program, that the FBI came to him and warned them about potentially foreign misinformation that might be posted, and that led them to suppressing or downgrading the New York Post article on Hunter Biden's laptop. Now we find out that the FBI warned Twitter about what they refer to as hack and leak operations involving Hunter Biden. See, while the Facebook was fairly general, based on some of the depositions here, it appears that FBI was quite specific in warning that, hey, you might want to keep an eye out for some information involving Hunter Biden, because it's probably a hack and leak operation, meaning this data was hacked and then leaked in order to smear probably then presidential candidate Joe Biden. Now, it's interesting because Twitter's former head of site integrity, Joel Roth, well, he signed a declaration that he sent to the federal, the FEC's, the Federal Election Commission's Office of Complaints, Examination, and Legal Administration on behalf of Twitter. This is in response to a Republican National Committee complaint that Twitter had offered an in-kind contribution to the Biden presidential campaign. And what's interesting, at least from my standpoint, is in this declaration, Mr. Roth said, hey, we had a policy in place about publishing articles from hacked material, the distribution of hacked materials. Well, except there's been no evidence that any of the information the New York Post used or any other stories about the Hunter Biden laptop were hacked. There's no evidence that the Biden laptop was hacked. In fact, there's evidence that he not only voluntarily turned it over to a repair shop to get repaired, but that he failed to come and pick it up. That's not hacking, that's abandonment. Now, Roth did state that, quote, I was told in these meetings that the intelligence community expected that individuals associated with political campaigns would be subject to hacking attacks, and that material obtained through those hacking attacks would likely be disseminated over social media platforms, including Twitter. He says, I also learned in these meetings that there were rumors that the hack and leak operation would involve Hunter Biden. So it appears that the FBI did not specifically ask Twitter and other social media platforms to spike the Hunter Biden laptop story, but that they put enough clues out there to say, wink, wink, nod, nod, listen, at least in Twitter's case, expect some hack and drop information, hack and leak, expected to be about a presidential candidate or relating to a presidential candidate. And then, oh, by the way, expected to be about Hunter Biden. They did pretty much everything but say, here's this story we want you to kill. And you wonder why people don't trust the election system when so much of this information seems to be manipulated. Now, this is nothing new, right? Yellow journalism has been around probably before this country existed. But here we have a government agency interfering with an election. And this is not, by the way, the first time this has happened. Now, I want to get into that, but first I have to take a break. But I'm wondering, are you tired of being tired? See, REM sleep is a supplement from Healthy Cell that's designed to support all four stages of sleep, helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deeply so you can wake up refreshed and ready to go. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. You can try REM Sleep or any of Healthy Cell's product. I love the REM Sleep because it's a travel-ready gel pack. I throw it in my bag when I hit the road. Helps me sleep like a baby. So again, go to healthycell.com, put your order together, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
I can tell you, one of the greatest pathophysiologic drivers for tiredness and fatigue during the day is poor quality sleep at night. People always focus on how long they slept, but they never think about the quality. And to improve the quality, there's a terrific product. That's the Healthy Cell REM Sleep Supplement. And what I tell friends and family and patients is take it every night consistently. It comes in a convenient bioabsorbable gel pack. Take it right before you go to bed. Take the gel pack, brush your teeth, go to bed. Its effects are nearly instantaneous, and patients get a well-rested sleep continuously, day after day, week after week, month after month. And then that daytime tiredness and fatigue melts away when there's a greater restful sleep the night before. So give it a try. Go to healthycell.com, and in the promotional code, type in Out Loud for 20% off your order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to healthycell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. Healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD. Healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about trust in our elections. I spent most of the first segment talking about the FBI and dealing with the 2020 elections, their apparent interfering with the news cycle by getting social media to suppress information without going through due process. And I guess maybe that's an important point I want to reiterate. It's not that, if the FBI had probable, they had evidence that, say, the Biden laptop had been hacked. If they had evidence that it was actually being interfered with, not just supposition, evidence. If they could go to a court and say, yes, we have a warrant to investigate this because here's our probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, that's one thing. That doesn't appear to be what happened. It seems to be a more of a, hey, let's just drop enough crumbs to get them to do this for us. But as I said, this wasn't the first time. Anybody remember 2016? Anybody remember Hillary Clinton and her illegal email server? Yeah, it was illegal. It was against federal law for her to conduct official government business on a private email server. I also remember FBI director, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, who first said, well, there's nothing there. Then, yes, it was wrong, but we're not going to do anything because nobody would actually prosecute this, even though that's not the FBI's job to make such determinations. But here we have, but again, in an attempt to, he says, we don't want to meddle in an election. Well, you've already done it, right? If you're releasing information, if you're investigating somebody and you don't tell people what the investigation is, that is meddling in the election. Personally, I think that investigation should have happened much earlier. But again, the timing of the releases from the FBI saying, listen, we're not going to offer, we're not going to file charges because, well, no one's actually going to prosecute something like this. Now, there's more to this story, and I got to take a little twist. See, by now you're all familiar with the Twitter files. You've heard about it. I've talked about it here. Well, there's one little twist in there I didn't catch when I was first reviewing it. See, the Twitter's deputy general counsel, when this first, the Hunter Biden laptop came up, basically said that it was reasonable to assume that the materials may have been hacked. Now, there's a lot of ifs and maybes, which shouldn't be too surprising when it comes from a lawyer. But is it reasonable to assume that it may have been? If all it takes is a reasonable to assume that something may have happened, you know what? It's reasonable to assume I may have won the lottery. Where's my check? But that isn't what was interesting to me. What somebody scrounged up that I didn't notice is this same person, James Baker. He used to be a lawyer for the FBI. And he was the lawyer that approved the FISA warrant that was used to spy on the Trump campaign. You know, the FISA warrant that was based on actual misinformation, a dossier that had no evidence, no proof, that was later found out to be basically opposition research from the Democratic Party. Are you sensing kind of a theme here? This is not a one-off situation. You have the same people in different positions being used to censor, I believe, for the purpose of manipulating an election, both at the FBI and on different social media platforms. And then people wonder, well, can I trust the election? Because if the people are making their decision with inaccurate or incomplete information, the election itself may be okay, but it may be made for the wrong reasons. Now, there's another reason to, well, maybe not trust the elections as much as we would like. And it actually has nothing to do with the FBI or any of that. It actually has to do with the primaries. Now, it's interesting. If you look at the Constitution, you do not see a requirement for primaries. In fact, the only place you find the word primaries is in a prohibition against poll taxes. You can't be denied the right to vote in a primary for not paying a tax. And there's a reason why primaries are not in this. And it goes back in many ways to George Washington's farewell address when he said, the spirit of revenge natural to party dissension is its own frightful despotism. The partisan bickering, the spirit of revenge between the parties is dangerous. Now, what does this have to do with primaries? Well, first, you have to understand what a primary actually is. As I said, it's not in the Constitution. There is no constitutional requirement that we have primaries, because a primary is a publicly funded private election or election for a private entity to limit the choices of the American people in the actual election. Let me say that again, because it's a little complicated. Right? A primary is a publicly funded election for a private organization to limit the choice of the American people when it comes to the actual election. See, what a primary, the primaries, the caucuses, all that stuff, they are basically tools of the political parties to choose their champions. These are internal workings. These are internal events designed to limit who you can vote for. Just think about it. In 2016 and 2020, the leader of the primaries initially for the Democratic Party was Bernie Sanders. But the party itself didn't want Bernie Sanders as their presidential candidate, so the system was manipulated and adjusted in order to make that not happen. But think of it this way. You were not allowed to easily vote, say, let's say just for grins and giggles, you wanted Bernie as president and Pence as vice president. You aren't allowed to do that. Let's keep it Democratic. Let's say you wanted Hillary as president and Bernie as vice president. Again, you weren't allowed to do that. The party, through this primary system, limited your easiest choice to one champion for each of the parties. Yes, technically, legally, you could have written in a candidate, but those have very strict rules. It's nigh on impossible for a write-in candidate at the presidential level to win. So if you realize that the primaries are all about controlling your choices, it's why we get to the point of the lesser of two evils. It's the lesser of two evils because the political parties have chosen which evils you get to choose from, knowing full well that you'll, by human nature, choose one of the names on the ballot, even if that's not your preferred candidate. Now, let's bring this back into 2022 and actually looking to 2024. The Democratic National Committee is expected to adopt recommendations from President Biden to rearrange the primary schedule. See, by tradition, both parties had Iowa as the first primary. It's why, you know, you could always tell when someone's planning to run for office or considering it because they're spending a lot of time in Iowa. Well, according to some commentators, see, that's being changed for a very simple reason. See, in 2020, Biden's nomination campaign was going down in flames. He was not doing well until South Carolina. He won South Carolina, and that kind of helped him be moved up to the top of the ticket. It was the change in the primary or the primary season that made such a difference. So now, understandably, Biden would like to have South Carolina first. Wouldn't it be nice to start off with a bang? If this is where he has the most support, this is where he wants to start. Just more proof that the political parties are manipulating the system to get the candidate they want. And before you go shaking your finger and swearing at the DNC or the RNC, recognize this exists because of laws within your state. See, there's nothing in your unless the state has a constitutional requirement in the state constitution, there's nothing that requires a political primary. There's nothing that requires the taxpayers of your state to pay for an election of a private organization. Remember, the DNC, the RNC, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, these are private organizations. They're 501c4s or something like that. They are nonprofit corporations. They're private entities. but yet you get to pay to help them choose how to limit your vote on actual election day. And by the way, this isn't just for president. This isn't just for Senate and House. This is for every election. Everybody from your governor down to the county dog catcher. They go through the same process. To me, it is, again, it's a manipulation of the system. Why am I expected to limit my choices to the people some private organization I'm not even a part of chose? Why do they get to choose for me? Who are the best candidates? Because we've been indoctrinated with the idea that primaries are the process by which we elect people. And it's only because we let the parties do it. I mean, just imagine you're a Bernie bro. And, you know, you saw two presidential election cycles where the party manipulated the process, either by they promoted Hillary Clinton in 2016. Everybody that was competing kind of started getting out and throwing their support to Biden against Bernie. You saw the party manipulate the process to prevent your man, your guy, from being top of the ticket, from being the official endorsed candidate by the party. And oh, by the way, once a party selects a candidate, every member of the party is expected to support them. So even, you know, Bernie was expected to support Clinton and Biden, even though maybe he thought they weren't the best and he wanted to run. If he wanted to stay in the party, that's what he had to do. Can you imagine being in that situation as a Bernie bro? Would you trust the process? Would you trust the election process? If what if you're a Trump supporter? Or even better, what if you are a never Trumper? We have a perfect example. Here you have a group of Republicans that were so upset with the Republican nominee in 2016 and 2020, well, 2016, that they fought against him during the election process, and in many cases continued to fight against him once he was in office. And then you wonder why people are losing trust in the election process, when it seems that even when they choose their preferred candidate, the party doesn't support it. The party tries to destroy them. But let's head back to the federal machine for a while. See, Attorney General Garland, he's been quite obvious in his partisanship. For example, certain conservative lawmakers have been demanding that he appoint a special counsel to probe the Hunter Biden laptop. Nothing. Absolute nothing. Instead, what Merrick Garland has done is he appointed a special counsel, Jack Smith, to investigate his boss's political opponent. See, Smith has been looking into non-crimes, things like objecting to the result of a presidential election, which, by the way, is not a crime. It's actually protected by the Constitution of the United States. Or he's been trying to get his hands on personal copies of presidential records. Again, that's your focus, not the evidence that the sitting president may have through his son dealings with foreign entities that are corrupt. I find it very interesting when you have an attorney general, supposedly the chief law enforcement officer of the federal government, that does not investigate an actual crime, but is more than willing to investigate things that are not only not considered crimes, they are expressly permitted by federal law. Oops. So you have to wonder, if he's willing to manipulate the election by raiding the home of a former president to gather information, only to find out after the fact, yeah, there was no evidence that there was actually a problem here. Wasn't a problem. It was being dealt with. Meanwhile, evidence that serious criminal activity was happening between with foreign entities But because it's the son of the current president, I guess he gets to get away with it. Evidence of bribery. And let's not forget, Joe Biden himself, in his own words, admitted to using a quid pro quo to manipulate a criminal investigation in a foreign country. That doesn't get investigated. And then you wonder why people are losing trust in the election system when we're seeing the manipulation of the system. Paul, what are we going to do? This is awful. What can we possibly do? Now, some people say they just give up. We're not going to vote anymore. It doesn't matter. It's all rigged. It's all cheating. I disagree with that. I believe this should warrant you to want to vote more, because you want to do everything you can to overcome the manipulation. And I understand it gets frustrating. There's a lot going on to frustrate the process. But if we let it discourage us, if we let that be an excuse to give up our right to choose our representatives in government, then the republic is dead. We may be a republic, but then we'll be a republic in name only, a true rhino. Because when they say Republicans in name only, don't believe such a thing exists. But America may become a republic in name only. And that should bother all of us, at least if you believe in things like freedom, liberty, rights, rule of law. Now, I want to start looking at some of the examples heading down towards the states, but I have to take another break first. Before I go, though, I want to encourage you to make America Out Loud a daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. Get their feeds, get their notifications. It's more important than ever that we not only find out about these stories, but that we share them. We take the articles, the podcast, the video, all this information that we have, and that we share it with other people. See, we talk about not trusting the elections, but much of what we're talking about is access to information. And you can make that happen by sharing this news. And by doing so, you can help all of us as we work to secure the blessings of liberty.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, ICSC-climate.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're looking at trust in our elections. We've looked at the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Attorney General. We've looked at a lot of the federal issues, and I want to talk about some of the state issues and what we can do about some of these issues. But before I go there, I've got one other thing for you to consider, and that is the malicious, what I consider to be malicious prosecution for January 6th. Now, there was the Oath Keepers recently were, one of them, their leader, was convicted of, what do they call it, conspiracy, seditious conspiracy. Well, that's very interesting. I'm looking at the indictment. And one of the counts was that there was a plot to oppose by force the 2020 lawful transfer of presidential powers. We see, that's very interesting because on January 6, 2021, there was no transfer of power. Let me say that again. There was no transfer of power. And in fact, the question that was being brought up was, would a transfer of power be lawful? Because remember, a lot of the January 6th issues had to do with problems during the election. Now, a lot of people point to a lot of different problems. I keep pointing out that at least five states illegally appointed electors for president. But now that's considered to be sedition. I also find it very interesting that they claimed that they were opposed by force, a transfer of power that was not taking place. There was no transfer of power taking place at that time. There was the counting of the votes in an election. That's it. People talk about they were confirming the votes or they were certifying the votes. No, they were counting the votes. That is it. But I also find it preposterous to find that this was supposed to be a forceful overthrowing of the government the forceful disruption of a transfer of power that was not taking place when there were no firearms, no explosives, no weapons that you would use to forcefully take over anything. See, to me, this is the other part of it. If you dissent to an election, now it's considered criminal, and I would say, in this case, massively overcharged to call it sedition, to call it an attempt to overthrow the government when you're questioning the validity of an election. That is not an attempt to overthrow the government. When you're pointing out that the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, requires that presidential electors be appointed in a manner determined by the legislature of the state, not the courts, not the state courts, not the federal courts, not the executive branches. That is not seditious conspiracy. And in fact, it is seditious to prevent that question. If you cannot question the validity of elections, that is the actual sedition, because now you're trying to replace the Constitution with the rule of whoever has the most voices. But again, that was at the federal level. Let's start looking at some of the stuff that's going on at the state level. Now, Colorado has had its issues. The Colorado Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, ordered a mandatory recount for the state's 3rd congressional district, even though the Democratic candidate conceded. And granted, it's a close election, but I find this interesting. There's, according to the Secretary, this is a mandatory recount. And this brings up an interesting point. See, there's no legal requirement for a candidate to concede an election. I concede means absolutely nothing. It's an honorable thing to do, but it's show. It's nothing else. But now, again, we have this, there's a recount, but they've conceded. It's part of this confusion about what's been going on. Now, if you want to talk about confusion in an election, you've got to look to Arizona, at least in 2020. There have been all sorts of problems, and many counties have had delays in certifying their elections. And, of course, you have the basic conflict of interest of one of the candidates for office actually overseeing the election for that office. See, Katie Hobbs, who's the governor-elect, she's actually the Secretary of State. So she was actually overseeing the election to which she was participating. Now, we have several counties that have had problems, and they've been trying to work them out before they certify the election. According to Arizona law, they had until November 28th to actually certify their elections. Apparently, Mojave County hasn't, because they had a boatload of issues. Election day was a disaster in Maricopa County and in others. And now the Secretary of State is threatening criminal action if they don't. In fact, two of the supervisors in Mojave County said they were voting, they were certifying the election under duress. Now, this to me is interesting, and there's a couple of things I haven't got all the details. But if you're talking about arresting and presenting felony charges, if the board members fail to certify an election, that seems to be a problem. Now, either they are not certifying it because they don't like the answer. That's a possibility, and that would be a crime. However, if they're not certifying it because there were problems, they recognize there were problems, and they're trying to make sure they get the correct answer, not the timely answer, in either case, this smacks of intimidation, which, again, further foments distrust in the election. You have the videos that were compiled in the movie 2000 Mules of apparent ballot box stuffing, of the casting of ballot harvesting at best, illegal ballot stuffing at worst, and people are not supposed to wonder what's going on. Then you've got the former police chief and city council member from Louisiana who was going to spend a year in prison for vote buying during the 2016 elections. Again, this is more cause for people to question the validity of the elections and the election outcomes. And of course, we can't forget all the delays in getting a lot of the election results. A lot of this is due, by the way, to state election laws that I'll say make no sense. They make no logical sense except for the ability that it makes it easier for people to cheat. So let me ask you, if you happen to live in one of these states, say in Arizona, where they had, or Illinois had problems too. No, Pennsylvania had problems too. You have to wonder, was the election handled properly? Did all the votes that were legally cast get counted properly? And I think it's a fair question to ask. And to me, if the issue is people are losing trust in the election process, the problem isn't the people. The problem seems to be the process, not just the elections themselves, but the entire process. See, election is no longer a season. It goes on for years. We've already started campaigning for the 2024 election, at least for president. And the process just seems to be so open to corruption. So, you know, every time you turn around, there's evidence of problems. Now, is the evidence of problems as widespread as some people would say? No. Out of 50 states so far, there were two that I know of that had serious election problems. And those states need to fix those problems if they wish to be trusted. But it's not that. And again, same thing with the 2020 election. There were several states that had serious problems. There are five states I know that illegally appointed electors. The problem is the vast majority of the people involved in that process had no clue that what they were doing was illegal. I remember talking to not only a constitutional attorney, but one that specialized in electoral college law, and I pointed out to her that it's the number of electors appointed that a person must get the majority of. Two is not the number of electors possible, it's the ones actually appointed. There's a serious lack of information. And I figure as we get closer to the 2024 elections, I'm going to be doing a lot of stories about the process, the actual process we go through to choose a president. The fact that it's the states that choose a president, not the people, which blows a lot of people's minds. But this also leads to the confusion. If people don't understand the election process, if they don't understand where a lot of the laws come from and what the Constitution says and doesn't say, well, it's easy for people with bits and pieces of information some of which is correct, some of it may be false, to weave a narrative that makes things worse. So, what can we do? What can we, the people, do? See, this isn't going to be fixed in Washington. It can be fixed in your state house, but they're not ready yet, at least from what I've seen. No, if we want to fix the process, if we want to fix the election, if you want to trust that the election was handled fairly and freely and transparently, then you must be willing to do something. See, first, we need to recognize, we talk about the right to vote. What about the duty to vote? And not only to vote, but to vote intelligently. You know, if you are walking into the voting booth and you write in Mickey Mouse as a candidate, that's foolishness. We should take the right to vote seriously. We are choosing people who will be exercising our power in our name. So the first thing we need to do is we need to work harder to educate ourselves about the candidates. We shouldn't be passive consumers of what they want us to hear, or what the media wants us to hear, or social media, or the political parties. We should be actively investigating the people that want to work for us to make sure they are qualified. People often ask me, so Paul, how do you vet a candidate? My very first question is, show me where you upheld your oath of office to support the Constitution when it cost you something. Not when you went along to get along, or not that you carry a Constitution in your pocket. When did you stand up against an unconstitutional measure in opposition to people when it cost you something? I rarely get an answer to that. I usually get some political platform plank that is just sophistry. So that's the first thing we should do, is we should be better informed voters. We should be informing ourselves. The second thing is we should be much more involved in our county election board. See, I find it interesting that most people don't realize your election starts at the county level. Sure, you go into a precinct, but the precinct is staffed by people who work for your county election board. It's one of the things I'm looking at being more involved in my county, knowing what's going on in the election board. Are the board using processes that make sure that your county election is handled properly? This is, again, to me, this is all very important. Once we've done that, most people look and say, well, that's just the county. What about everything else? Worry about your county first. See, if you get your county in order, then you can help your neighbor counties to get their stuff in order. And then third, look at your state election laws. Are the state election laws making the election process more trustworthy or less trustworthy? For example, does your voting require some sort of identification? Put it this way, if anybody could walk up, claim to be you, and cast your vote for you, that is not a secure election, right? Photo IDs, or at least some sort of ID, photo ID for in person, is an important part of making the election more trustworthy. Yes, there are people who are not going to be able to vote. What we're trying to do is make sure that the people who can legally vote are allowed to legally vote, and that those who are not allowed to legally vote are not allowed to vote. Let's make sure that counting, if you have early elections and mail-in ballots, why do some states like Arizona wait until after they've counted the in-person election to start counting the mail-in ballots and the early voting? That makes no sense. All that does is delay the results unnecessarily. I've yet to have anybody give me a legitimate reason why you would do that. And also, let's make sure at all levels, right, from the county up to the state, let's make sure that when we're dealing with election systems, we are bringing in experts, people that know the underlying technologies. Not just, you know, hey, I'm an expert in electronic voting. No, I want someone that's an expert on the actual systems themselves that can come in and help us understand what's going on. See, rather than waiting for someone else, why don't you start? Because you can start at the county level and you'll have a tremendous impact. No, it doesn't fix the problem in 2024, but we've been making a mess of our elections for decades. Since at least 2000, our election processes have gotten worse and worse and worse. We got to start fixing them somewhere. And let's face it, if we don't do it, who will? See, everyone seems to be waiting for someone to do something, but in that case, no one does anything. And nothing ever changes. As Albert Einstein said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, was his definition of insanity. So those are some ideas of ways that we can help make the elections more trustworthy. But let's recognize it's going to take time. And it's also going to take help. So one of the things you can do is you can contact your friends and your family and your neighbors and remind them that they can hear the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Can't listen live? Listen to the podcast. Episodes usually hit the podcast a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Constitution Study. Or you can find all the links on the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. Not just for the show and the podcast, but also for our apps for Apple, Android, and Alexa. Do me a favor, though. Share them. Become part of the solution. Don't just use these tools. Share them. Get others to help you. They're the ones that are going to help you with the election problems. They're the ones that are going to help you support more trustworthy election laws when you work together. So share that information, share the links, share the episodes, share the stories. By doing so, we also share in the ability to restore the blessings of liberty to this great country from sea to shining sea.